This is Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by Anderson, Agostino, and Keller, attorneys at law, with offices in South Bend, Indiana, serving the local community's legal needs with a diverse and innovative group of lawyers. Let their team be your edge on legal matters. Contact the lawyers at Anderson, Agostino, and Keller at 574-288-1510 or visit their webpage at aaklaw.com.
Welcome to Irish Illustrated Insider. Pete Sampson, Sim Priester, Tim O'Malley here a couple days before Notre Dame's trip to North Carolina. I think when the season started, looked like a pretty interesting game. Then as Notre Dame rolled and North Carolina fell apart, it became less interesting. And then after last weekend, Brandon Wimbush gets hurt with a foot injury of sorts. Now it becomes interesting again. So I don't know. For me, I'm most interested to see what happens with Ian Book on Saturday afternoon. And based on talking to a bunch of sources over the last 12 hours or so, I will be absolutely shocked if Ian Book does not start this game.
Yeah, it certainly points in that direction. And I think we're all excited to see what Ian Book can do. I think we're all confident that Ian Book can play good football. That's all we've seen of him when we've had glimpses of him. As it pertains to North Carolina, I mean, we knew they had lost a lot offensively. All their weapons, 98%+ of their offensive productivity. And the loss of Gene Chizik as their defensive coordinator, although they didn't have a great 2016 season on the defensive side of the football. And then you throw in the 13, you know, we throw that number around, 13 season-ending injuries. Not all those guys are frontline players, of course, but about half of them are. So, I mean, they're struggling. I will stand by the notion, having watched, in particular, the Duke game and the Louisville games, that there is athletic talent on the field for the Tar Heels. That doesn't mean that translates into good quality team football, because they've struggled with that. But they've had close losses. We went through all the close losses that Notre Dame had last year. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're good or getting better, but they have been right there. They were up a point on Louisville going into the fourth quarter. So I don't think we're at a point where we can just assume Notre Dame's going to go on the road now and they're going to win by 17, 21 plus points.
With a backup quarterback.
With a backup game, yeah, with that variable thrown into it. But and it's going to be the mid-80s. You know, I mean, whatever. You can look at all the variables. I think it's kind of a difficult game to pick against the spread. I'm confident Notre Dame will win with Ian Book or Brandon Wimbush at quarterback, but the spread gets a little bit tricky.
I agree with you. And we talked all since the spring. I think all three of us just felt if Ian Book is thrown into a game or if Ian Book has to start a game, he will do well in that game. And then my caveat after that is then there's plenty of film on him and you don't want that situation going into USC and NC State. As it times out, it's going into USC and NC State, which would be the worst time to have to play your backup quarterback. This is one of the better times to play your backup quarterback. Obviously, last week would have been ideal. But Ian Book can beat North Carolina. I do agree that to assume Notre Dame's going to go in there and roll them just because Georgia Tech did last week, that's a different animal. I mean, you made the best point. Yeah, the Louisville game, they were in the Louisville game.
Yeah.
And that's... I would just throw out that Georgia Tech loss last week.
I totally agree with that.
When you're broken, beaten up team, and you're going against that option, it just
How many times have we seen Georgia Tech just... I mean, or Navy or what have you. Yeah, I watched part of it before going to Notre Dame Stadium last week, but that wasn't one of the games I wanted to watch this week, because of 404 yards rushing.
Right. Now,
I don't think that tells us what we need to know.
One thing you don't have to throw from that game, though, and Pete, I think, brought this up in the press box, is when you play Georgia Tech or Navy the next week, isn't that fun? That helps Notre Dame a little bit.
Yeah.
So in that way, you just there's a lingering effect.
You're already beat up.
Yeah, you're already beat up, and then you get to play an option. So, no, but I expect Ian Book to do well. I think Ian Book has the qualities you want in a college backup quarterback. He throws well on the run. He's not sneaky athletic. He's just athletic. They keep calling him sneaky athletic. He's pretty fast.
Well, why is that, Tim?
Yeah, I know that. It's just, I mean, it's so strange. Now, Wimbush is a sneaky good passer once in a while. No, it's just a strange thing. But I do think that he will fare well, and I don't think the road's a problem for him.
Yeah, I mean, the Georgia Tech game, it was 10-0 Georgia Tech in the third quarter. It's not like they got run off the field, and then they threw, I think, not a pick six, but basically, oh yeah, it was a pick and then a one-play touchdown drive, and then the game was over.
They weren't threatening to challenge and take the lead, per se.
But it's not like, we're not talking about a Sun Belt lower level MAC team here.
MAC champion? Or just
MAC champion. MAC champion. But I would say, like, the stats, I mean, I didn't think we were going to come back to this stat this year, the redshirt freshman quarterback Brian Kelly record. But it's worth keeping in mind, he's 23-4 when starting a freshman quarterback or a redshirt freshman quarterback.
What are the reasons behind that?
I can tell you the reasons behind the four. The opponents were Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, and Stanford. And he's 17-0 against an unranked opponent, starting a redshirt freshman or freshman quarterback. Why? Because they run the ball and do less offensively.
Okay, well, that's the answer I'm looking for.
And what does this team do? Run the ball and do a little bit less offensively in the passing game. So I think that Brandon Wimbush could win this game. I think Ian Book could win this game. I think let's say that they had to start Avery Davis.
Stop right there.
That's okay.
I'm skipping over to Avery Davis here.
Somewhere else.
If they had to throw out Avery Davis in this game, I think they would win that too. I think that the way this team is set up.
This one game, you're saying.
This one game. I'm not saying they would win a lot of the rest of the games, but in the same way that I think whatever we see from Ian Book on Saturday, I think people should be very cautious about, well, that means X, because it is still North Carolina, which ranks, 107th in yards per play allowed, 108th in passing touchdowns allowed, 109th in yards per carry allowed, and 105th in scoring defense. So Ian Book should start, he should play well, and he should put up some really good stats. I don't think any of that will send a message to me that he should start over Brandon Wimbush moving forward, nor should it send that message to anybody else.
But it will.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. I'm just saying, please show some restraint. So.
Well, yeah.
He's going to look like Powell's against Northwestern this game, isn't he? Dropping dimes all over the field.
Yeah, I think, I mean, he is capable. He throws a nice ball, man. I mean, he always has every time we've seen him. North Carolina, Chaz Surratt he presents some problems. They'll run zone read. He'll scramble. He's got decent size. He's not Wimbush size, but he has decent size, and he can run. I will call, one thing, he's completing 63.3% of his passes. 20 of those are to Jordan Brown, a running back. Now, at least he can make those throws. But those are obviously easier throws to make to have a high completion percentage. They lost Austin Prohl. That's huge. Their leading returning wide receiver. Anthony Ratliff Williams has kind of emerged, here recently. And there, Michael Carter, their other running back, has a little bit more zip. Jordan Brown's more power. Defensively, again, I see a lot of good individual athletes, but you can definitely run on them. Where they're tricky is on third down. They'll give you these.
They'll
put like 5-6 stand up guys on the line, and you don't know exactly where it's coming from. And they are pretty good off the edge. They'll bring a corner, Stewart off the edge. They've got some players there. But the bottom line is Notre Dame goes and plays well. Notre Dame, sticks to the plan and continues to do what Brian Kelly's been happy about and getting their refocus and doing what they have to do. And that's where the key, the offensive line, I think we're at a point, especially against an opponent like this, that you can count on them being ready to plow some people. And that's where the difference in the game should be.
I mean, it's keep the ball on the ground. Don't put Ian Book in a position where he's I'm not even going to say, like, don't make Ian Book have to carry the offense. Like, that would be moronic. That's never going to... I'm saying just have him throw 12 times. Just run the ball. Be boring offensively. Your running backs have been very good in ball security.
I'd trust him to throw 19.
And if you don't, don't turn the ball over, there is a near 100% likelihood.
He's throwing intermediate routes better than Brandon Wimbush is right now.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, especially right now. That's, Brandon Wimbush. Well,
last Saturday.
No, I think that's going to be a strength of Ian Book. There are some things that Ian Book does better than Brandon Wimbush, and that's okay. I think throwing on the run will be one of them.
Throwing on the run is one of them.
Intermediate routes will be another one. Arm strength is not. I think the likelihood of throwing an interception is much higher with Ian Book based on what we saw.
Yeah, just don't want him. You don't want him forcing anything into tight windows. I think if he avoids that temptation, he'll be fine throwing the football. But I agree. I don't know if I'd go so far as to say 12, but I think what Tim said, 19 or 20. It's hard to put a number on those kind of things because Chip Long likes to come out and throw on first down. So
I think you could trust him enough for that. I think you can trust him enough for that 20 throw range. Yeah. But as long as it's 45 to 20 rush pass, that's what you need. I mean, that's what you're looking for.
A 2-1.
Yeah.
Now, how healthy those running backs are and who those carries go to, I guess, still remains to be seen.
Now, don't forget Josh Adams' allergies. That could be a key to
the game. He looked terrible. Yeah. When he walked up to the podium yesterday, I'm like, man, what's wrong with him? And he immediately said his allergies were acting up.
But he took some vitamin C, so I think it's going to be okay.
I think injured or hurt Josh Adams running with Ian Book is plenty. Not sure hurt Dexter Williams or Tony Jones would be plenty on the road. That could get dicey a little bit. You know Josh Adams can run through bumps, bruises, sprains, and twists, and I don't know if Dexter Williams can because we've never seen it, and he is not the type of runner that should lose his speed and be as effective. Josh Adams will gut out if he has to. If he can't move, he will carry 15 times for 71 yards. If he can't physically move his body, he'll find a way. But I think they definitely need him. They definitely need Josh Adams. I would be concerned if you enter this game and Josh Adams goes down the first quarter.
Yeah, I mean,
because the other guys aren't healthy either. Right. They're not healthy.
I feel like my expectation for running back is Josh Adams will start. He'll log his 17, 18 carries. He'll get dinged up, come out, go back in, come back out. Tony Jones will probably get 10, 12 carries. I think Dexter Williams will get like 2 or be a DNP.
He looked more hurt than they told us. He was limping. Although we noticed him limping during the
pre-game, yeah.
Pre-game, but he also was wearing a boot, so we have to be cautious about when we say he's limping. You do kind of limp in a boot, right?
It just you have to.
You don't walk right, so.
You can't.
He was in a boot pre-game.
You're offset.
He did not, yeah, exactly. He did not look like he was ready to play football in a week, though.
No, because when you're wearing a walking boot, usually you're not. That's what Brandon Wimbush was wearing.
Well, where's Mike Bean's ankle brace? Mike Bean, a longtime Notre Dame trainer, I think dating back fairly close to my playing days of baseball in Notre Dame, not quite that long, but he's been around for a long time, and he's created apparently an ankle brace that has really helped people. It's a every running back on the roster should have a pair of those ankle braces in their locker.
Yeah.
And quarterback.
You know, it's something that sort of picked up some momentum on the message board because of something CJ Holmes put on social media that apparently he may be active this weekend. And then that creates the usual, well, do you want to play a freshman debate? We'll see. But, it, you know, you got with Deion McIntosh, you at least have 5 able bodies in some way.
In some way, yeah. That's
good. I think Dexter Williams is the least able of the 5.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I understand CJ Holmes has not traveled to the 2 previous road games. It makes perfect sense to take him. I don't think that means he's going to play, regardless what he tweeted out or put on Instagram or whatever. I mean, you don't want to use his year of eligibility if you don't have to. And I mean, I understand about running backs and 5 years and all that kind of stuff, but I mean, they went into the season feeling he wasn't 100%.
Right.
You don't want to use him 100% 5 weeks later. I would use
if CJ Holmes had been suspended instead of hurt and he's ready to play, I would throw him out there immediately, because if he's any good whatsoever, he will not start for Notre Dame in his 5th year, because he'll leave like he should. And if he just comes back for a 5th year, he's going to get beaten out by a better player. So the 5th year running backs don't. I can list them. Are we ready? Here's the 5th year running backs at Notre Dame since 1972 that have ever done anything. Julius Jones. He was suspended as a senior. That's it. One former freshman redshirt has ever led the program in rushing. Sierra Wood. And he was the last guy in the world that was coming back. For a 5th year. It's just they don't come back for 5 years.
Here's what I've gathered on CJ Holmes. Like, his family is very adamant about him playing this year, because it's the first step to making it to the NFL.
And running backs,
that's not 5. Somebody who's coming back for a 5th year.
No, and when I said suspended, I was throwing it out there in that I meant healthy. He was obviously not suspended. I didn't mean to say that on, you know, people that misinterpret that. I'm saying if he wasn't hurt with that shoulder surgery and he's just ready to roll and you need him all of a sudden, go out there. But
if he's healthy, go with it. Because, I mean, you look at the stats, I wrote about this a little bit yesterday, Deion McIntosh's efficiency is I've never seen anything like it. It's that low. He's at 21%. I mean, last week he had 1 efficient carry and 12 rushes, and the week before he had 4 efficient carries and 12 rushes. He scored 2 touchdowns. I think he's a good guy to run out the clock with, but in terms of it's the second quarter. It's 7-3. We need to. And Josh Adams just went down. Tony Jones can't play. CJ Holmes.
Yeah, get out there. That's why I thought his performance against Boston College was a little blown out of proportion because Notre Dame's offensive line at that point was plowing. Yeah. I mean, there may have been some second team reps there.
Yeah,
and so BC Boston had College their back
was done.
Yeah, BC was done. Their starters were done. Their backups weren't in the frame of mind to play. And so McIntosh, any one of us would have had 4 or 5 yards on his 8 or 9 yard carry. So, he's listed at 193. You wouldn't think he's 193. He's a smaller back. And there's a reason why they moved him to receiver last year and a reason why they moved him back this year.
All right, let's move ahead to the picks. O'Malley, you start.
Yeah, I would be cautious with Notre Dame favored by this much on the road, given the circumstances of the team. But I think the defense will play like they have been. They play hard all the time. They're not perfect. They'll miss some tackles, I think, against better athletes than they played last week. And I'm in that Ian Book can put 30 points on the board, too, with Notre Dame running game. Because the reason I said Notre Dame's going to score so many points this year was because of the running game, not because I thought they were going to throw. So running the ball more means just as many points to me as it would. So I am I just bumped it up a little, in the 33-20 range. Not covering. If it's 30-20, if it's 30-21, I'm not going to be surprised. I think North Carolina will get to 20. People are knocking on the door right now of someone's going to break through against this defense. I don't think it has to be USC, and I think North Carolina's right there in a game where no one's really giving them any shot, so they will play pretty well.
I don't know how well North Carolina's going to play. I think Notre Dame has proven itself defensively that they're good. They're not great. They're not going to get ripped up by a redshirt freshman named Chaz. Like that.
Spelled with double Z.
Yeah.
I think that's better.
Let me say this. Even Brian Van Gorder's defense would shut down a quarterback named Chaz.
No, now we're getting off the rails here a little bit.
But I do think Ian Book handing the ball off is just fine.
Does Chaz have a pulse?
Chaz. Chaz. So I like Notre Dame 41-20. I don't think a defense is going to shut them down entirely, but I think the 20 will include a touchdown in the fourth quarter when the game is already decided.
I guess that's our difference.
I like Notre Dame to win comfortably on Saturday.
That's our difference. Mine's the 33-20 without it being like a tack on touchdown. So that's the game I kind of
That's a 14-point difference between our picks. Right. Like the style of the game, I think we see something different.
Yeah, I'm kind of right there with you guys. I'm kind of inclined to pick something a little bit closer than the spread, just because Notre Dame going on a road, 14.5-point favorite, backup quarterback. I mean, I'm not sure that we can make that leap all of a sudden with a road game. But I think North Carolina will. I do think North Carolina will challenge. I do. Now, what does challenge mean? Will they ever lead? Will they be within, 10 points after the first quarter and a half? I don't know. I don't think this will be.
Is it over at halftime for everybody?
Overish. So what's the lead to call it over?
Well, Michigan State was
21-3.
Michigan State was over at halftime. If they didn't blow it.
Well, that was 28-7. Will it be 28-7 at half? Will Notre Dame have a 21-point lead at halftime? I say no.
I say no as well.
Yeah, I think it will be a game at halftime. It won't be a game at the end of the third quarter, though. I think that's where they'll.
I just don't think we should be. We just shouldn't be shocked if North Carolina plays pretty well. They've played pretty well.
It's going to rain, just in honor of us being out there.
It better not.
No, it's not.
No, he's kidding. It's going to be in the mid-80s.
There's a tropical storm coming through that's going to land on Sunday afternoon. Tropical storm Nate.
I got to find my glow stick picture from last year.
If it was Tropical Storm Chaz, then I might be reconsidering the
I wish everybody could have seen this motley crew walking from the parking lot to the press box and back. And then on the way back, O'Malley notices that there was a tree that was unearthed while we were inside.
Can we buzz the Carter-Finley Stadium to see if they replanted while we're down there?
I just remember Pete. So we're in the press box and you can see the towers and the light fixtures swaying. That's how we knew it was windy, aside from the ball not being able to go forward when they threw it. But so we walk outside to go to the interview room. Pete opens his umbrella and just gets completely eviscerated by the wind. I was like, maybe they shouldn't have been throwing so much.
not a good situation. Hopefully it'll be much nicer at our trip to Tobacco Road this weekend. So we will get into segment 2, questions for our readers and Twitter, next on Irish Illustrated Insider.
Irish Illustrated Insider is brought to you by Anderson, Augustino, and Keller, attorneys at law, with offices in South Bend, Indiana, serving the local community's legal needs with a diverse and innovative group of lawyers. Let their team be your edge on legal matters. Contact the lawyers at Anderson, Augustino, and Keller at 574-288-1510 or visit their webpage at aaklaw.com.
Segment two of Irish Illustrated Insider. Questions from our readers, starting with Irish Bob. Is this the best team chemistry you've seen in a Notre Dame football team?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, we'll see. If they win the rest of their games, then yes. And if they don't, maybe. If they fall apart, then no.
It's a good question in terms of best. It's impossible to say, but team chemistry. They have lost a game and rallied, so that is usually where you look for some team chemistry. That's the 2015 team lost to Clemson, and there was nothing but we're going to keep winning from that post game. When you talk to Nick Martin and Joe Schmidt, they were angry that they had lost that game to a great team. Notre Dame was pretty angry they lost the game to Georgia to what's becoming a very good team. So I think they have really good team chemistry. I know it's better than 2016.
Yes.
When Tilling coaching staff chemistry, and I know it's better than 1994, my senior year, when they were all fighting on the bus before losing the Fiesta Bowl. Also a bad team chemistry year. And seeing guys out the linebacker till 3 in the morning on Thursday night was bad. When they start and play poorly and fumble. Anyway, segue. Go ahead.
I cover the 1988 team, and I can't possibly imagine a chemistry, especially on defense. I can't imagine greater chemistry than that. But we're not talking about that level of team. It's really good. It's really, really good.
In the face of a loss, too, is what really...
No, I agree. I think that's a good benchmark.
I think this is worth noting. I don't think the 2012 team had great team chemistry. I think it had huge, slightly disruptive personalities on the defense.
NFL talent on the D-line.
At a quarterback who, I believe, threw sort of a fit during the Purdue game and was benched for Reese and then got benched again later and then was late for a class and was benched for a series against Miami. I mean, it's like
professor whose name he didn't know.
Right. I mean, I think that team was had some amazing, like all-time great leadership at the top, but I don't know if it had chemistry from 1 to 85. And I think this team seems to have it. I mean, it's been interesting this week talking to players about I wrote about this on Sunday, but just sort of the locker room being rearranged because it certainly has forced players to get to know guys they wouldn't know. Quentin Nelson was asked, like, you know, where his locker is because the locker apparently has moved around. And at one point he was next to Kofi Wardlow. Like, I don't think Quentin Nelson naturally would say anything to Kofi Wardlow. And the fact that, like, when he was asked, what'd you learn about Kofi Wardlow? If he had replied, he's on the team, I would have accepted that as like, that's something you really would learn because I don't think they would ever interact. So I think that has some good benefits from it. And I think one of those benefits, maybe if you really want to look hard, and I tried to squint and see it this way, was the points off turnovers. That when the defense makes a play, then the offense wants to respond and make a play. And that's why I think it's 70-3 for the season.
Yeah, that's crazy numbers.
11 turnovers forced, 10 touchdowns off those 11 turnovers.
I don't see things like that, and you've written about those kind of things, and I don't think those in itself make a great team, but it does add to the chemistry of a football team. And that's important in the grand scheme over the course of a physical 12-game schedule. It's very important to have that.
Yeah, it's like, do they create the great team, or are they just byproducts of a great team? I don't really know.
That's what somebody asked me on Twitter about, is going on the road, and is that the greatest improvement? Well, that's a byproduct of improved strength and conditioning, better coordinators, running the football, you know, all the things that
better
add
game
up
plan
to, you don't
just
go on the road and win. It's all the things that add to it. And things like developing chemistry. You know, I don't know that people really realize that when you're part of a football team, you can't know everybody. There's especially when you're offense, defense, even if you mix lockers up, that assists. But, you know, a lot of guys, especially the older guys, they don't. I mean, you can imagine some of the seniors and fifth-year seniors don't know any of the freshmen and don't care to.
Yeah. I mean, I think it all sort of traits back to this is when we described the Michigan State performance as, like, very well coached I think these kinds of things are signs of a well-managed, well-coached team. So I give Brian Kelly a lot of credit for this.
Including the eight-man groups they had in the summer and spring where they actually had a count. They wanted to win everything, the eight-man group. Mm-hmm. It was, I mean, it could be from sprints to better practice to cleaning up your locker. But there was actually a winner, and they took pride in it, and the eight-man groups weren't. The eight linebackers and eight wide receivers, they're all mixed up. He started back in January.
It's a good idea. It's a good thing.
Seems to be working. It's pretty cool.
I mean, athletes of this caliber and that competitiveness, they want to compete.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, playing a video game, whatever. So, that in and of itself isn't why they win, but it contributes to being a team with greater chemistry.
Dip 98, one of the few players that could benefit from Ian Book starting might be Kevin Stepperson, given that the two probably shared significant second and third team practice reps during Stepperson's stay in the doghouse. Agree, disagree, or who else might benefit?
I guess I disagree just because I don't think it... I disagree on a point of irrelevance. I don't think that Ian Book starting is going to have a whole lot to do with Kevin Stepperson's success or lack thereof.
Yeah, I mean, I don't... I mean, maybe, but I over the course of August and all that, I mean, they're throwing to everybody, and I realize this is, you know, you're talking about like a scrimmage situation, twos versus twos. They're throwing passes throughout the summer. You know, they're learning the timing of how a guy gets out of his break, things like that. I just don't think you can assume that. Okay, he was working second team. He was working second team. Therefore, they have better chemistry. They may, but I don't think you can make that assumption.
I think Stepperson's going to benefit from this being game two instead of game one, where obviously they're pressing to get on the ball. And I think he'll benefit more from the next week of practice. And I would say benefit from game three, but I kind of hope he's comfortable by the time game three rolls around.
Yeah, it would. No, I mean, make no mistake. It would be nice if you could get him
ready to roll
three or four touches. You know, as opposed, he had a -3 reception or something last week. I mean. You know, four catches for 52 yards, that would be really nice progress.
They will take a shot deep to Stepperson in this
that's
game.
That's a good, that'd be great idea. Maybe first play of the game. Chip Long likes to, I mean, I don't know how many, maybe I'm missing that.
No, you're right. He hit St. Brown to start the season for 33 yards. Yeah. He missed a flea flicker that should have been a touchdown. Right. So and they he like missed Cam come. Smith that should have been a touchdown. So you're right. They do.
Yeah.
Maybe with Ian Book you don't do that. Maybe you do. Why not?
St. Brown with Michigan State was, you know, first drive at least.
Yeah.
They'll go deep early. Maybe Kevin Jefferson could be that guy. All right, questions from Twitter. Rapid fire. First one is Chris Piper. If Notre Dame loses at North Carolina, what happened?
I'd say there's a mistake in the kicking game because I've been kind of hinting towards there's gonna be a long kick return. They're giving up.
Yeah,
they're giving up too many.
Feels like that's happening.
Yeah. And I would think that there is probably a red zone failure for Notre Dame going in, which hasn't happened yet because that takes time off the clock, which Carolina needs with no points. And I think there has to be this trio has to happen. I think there has to be a major defensive play that sets up a touchdown.
You lose the turnover battle.
Yeah.
Which
in the wrong area too.
Yeah, right. You know, that's I mean in any football game.
3-1 is a problem. If you go down 3
to right.
3-1.
A stat that I'm interested to track in this game is that remember how well Notre Dame's third down defense started out the first three games? Well, they're giving up 50% conversion rate in the last two. Now, North Carolina's been dreadful on third down offensively. But Surratt has that ability to convert a third and six by scrambling and doing something with his legs. So, you know, if North Carolina is suddenly going from whatever they are, 26% conversion rate to 42 in this game, then, you know, they possess the football a little bit more and maybe make it close. That's a stat that I think Mike Elko certainly would like to see a turnaround this week after the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's not quite like I was all up in the nickel defense at the beginning of the year. That's and really taken a huge hit the last couple weeks. Next question. This is a combo because these guys asked the same one from Brett Slama and Carlton Butler. And they basically both want to know, why doesn't Josh Adams get more respect nationally?
Honestly, I think the loss to Georgia. He didn't have
like a
very,
Heisman situation.
Yeah, he didn't have a very good game. He had a bad game just because the whole offense did. And that was the visible game. They lost. He didn't play well. So people really nationally don't care about your yardage against. And he didn't have a great game against Michigan State, if you're looking at it nationally. Think of it that way. You know, the yards have come against Temple, BC, and Miami, Ohio. So it makes sense. I mean, we know he's really good, but he has not had great big games. I wouldn't say Georgia was his fault at all, or very little of it. And he was banged up against Michigan State and had to run through it.
Yeah, and you're looking at, you know, Saquon Barkley from Penn State. They're undefeated. He's putting up, his highlights are outstanding. He's got a kick return in there, and then Bryce Love's in four figures rushing already.
USC would help. They'll be on national TV if Josh Adams is 175 yards against USC. It'd start to get more
love. Like, but even in that game, like, Josh Adams to me is not going to be the best running back in that game. I mean, Ronald Jones,
right? Unless he is the best running back in that game, that can help him. Does that make sense on that day?
Unless he
statistically is. No, I'm just, I think the reason Josh Adams doesn't get more respect nationally is you look at him as a pro athlete and you just see more athletic running backs.
Well, the other thing is he's on a team that was 4-8 last year. So going into the season, there was no respect for anything or anybody on the Notre Dame team.
Let's be fair, too. If Josh Adams had 98 yards and 2 touchdowns and they beat Georgia, he'd be getting more respect nationally. He had about 12 yards. So that's
I would agree. I bet we would still think that he wasn't getting, you know, as much publicity. Certainly as Love and Barkley.
Yeah, I'm all for BK saying whatever he wants to say.
Yeah.
Yes.
Josh Adams. I think the Saquon Barkley thing is silly, but come to the defense of your player. Like, that's great. I think it's what a head coach should do.
He does everything they ask him to do. So that's Josh Adams does everything he
can
do.
He's got to stay healthy, too. I mean,
he does run through it.
He's been in Notre Dame uniform for 30 games. He's played in every one of them, and he's a warrior. There's no doubt about that, but he usually has exited every game this year with something.
He's 5-for-5 coming out injured.
You know, a lot of factors. I don't know if the question's asked because Notre Dame's not getting any respect. I don't know if it's a matter of that, but I think a big part is they were 4-8 last year and they didn't respect anybody on this team.
That, without question, Josh Adams is a hard ass and should get more respect for that.
Yep.
Yes.
He is super tough. All right, next question is from Tim, and he wants to know, what do we think about Jonathan Bonner's development? Not a guy that I hear much about.
I tweeted about him, and then I asked a question of Brian Kelly this week, and he's tough. He holds a point of attack. I don't know that he's a playmaker. I don't think that he's shown to be a playmaker, but the starting point with this defensive line this year was holding the point of attack. I've used the phrase a billion times because that was the next step was not making plays behind the line of scrimmage. The next step was holding a point of attack. Okay, now can you get some things done in the backfield? They had 11 tackles for loss in the first game. They've had 19 in the last 4 games. So that's kind of diminished because there's a cap on the talent that's on that defensive line. Mike Elko puts them in schemes that benefits the whole, which is why Jerry Tillery's leading the team in sacks. And I'm answering everything except about Jonathan Bonner. I mean, he's not a great player, but he's a solid functional football player, and it's a good fit with what's happening around him. I think MTA is a guy that has certainly much more long-term ability. He's longer, he's quicker. He can crease gaps better than Bonner, but Bonner's a godsend under the circumstances.
I think if MTA was a junior, he'd be starting, and Bonner would be an excellent backup to him, and we'd be talking more about how valuable it is to have a backup like Bonner. But he's forced into being the starting role, and he's doing what they ask him to do. He certainly isn't a problem.
No, I mean, I look, Notre Dame has essentially 13 starters, because Trombetti and Crawford are kind of starters. But if you rank them 1 to 13, I think Bonner would be 13.
Sure. That's fair.
But he's a fine 13.
Yeah, he is.
You know, the same way that...
He's a better 13 than we thought he would be, because we talked about this before the year started. Definitely. He was the last starter.
What defensive line... I wrote about this in Thursday Thoughts. What defensive lineman that's playing hasn't improved since the first game of the season? I can name one, but it's unfair to name that one because...
So, I mean, the guys are Hayes, Bonner, Tillery...
Trombetti.
Okwara, Kareem, MTA... I mean, Heinisch is the only one because he's not playing anymore.
Right, but it's not his fault.
No, exactly. That's the one that would have named. He would have been a redshirt, but when he has played, again, he's held the point of attack. Yeah. He has a real tough time getting off blocks to make a play. But he's a freshman nose. Yeah. I mean, that's a ridiculous ask under the circumstances.
Basically, they're 9-for-9 then.
Yeah.
All right, next question. This is still on the defensive line from Kung Pao Poyo. Tim Priester was a disappointed father about Jerry Tillery at the beginning of the year. Is he now a proud papa?
video right now.
I think the body wearing the uniform number 99 has gotten a lot better. I mean,
he looks just like physically in a uniform. That's interesting the way you started that way. Man, he looks
good. He's done a great job. Good. I give him all the credit in the world. I give Quentin Nelson credit. I give Mike Elston a ton of credit. Mike Elston.
Quentin Nelson for putting him through the ringer.
Yes, right. Yeah. They were workout partners. What Mike Elston has done, which is directly tied to Mike Elko coming in and creating everything that they're doing defensively. Jerry Tillery has done a really, really nice job. Will he play defensive tackle in the NFL? No. Could he play offensive tackle in the NFL? Yeah, I mean, I think that that ultimately would be his best position, but he hasn't played the position on a higher level. So, but he's done a great job. I don't think that I've been shy about saying Jerry Tillery every week is doing a really, really nice job and has vastly improved. His stamina is incredible compared to where it was. Great job, Jerry Tillery. Proud
analyst.
Stepdad.
Yeah. Tangent, Mike Elston is the defensive line coach of all five of the best defensive lines in the Brian Kelly era. Wanted to put that out there because couldn't have been told more than 100 times about how Mike Elston had to be removed from the defensive line. And look, what happens when he coaches the line, they play well. Yeah. Just wanted to say that.
Yeah, I mean, Jerry Tillery still has probably 21 starts left in his college career. I mean, he seems like he could have, there's probably going to be some dominant performances in there. You know, it's not going to be 21.
I mean, I don't see him being an NFL defensive tackle. Yeah, there are too many. He has the dimensions.
Yeah.
That's one thing that he really has going for him, that God gave him 6'6", and then he's building onto the 300 plus. Mm-hmm.
And the stakes of the bet are classified, but Pete Sampson and I have a Jerry Tillery related season bet. So we will fill you in on that at the end of the year.
Just possibly. Just know that I am cheering for every tackle for loss that your children has. And our last question from Dreamcatcher, and he wants to know, how long do you think it will take Brandon Wimbush to improve and be a complete passer?
The more they put him in situations like last week in Boston College where he has to learn to throw those routes accurately, the better. I'm not smart enough. Nobody's smart enough to know when that happens exactly. I think the first step, I've said it in the last couple podcasts, the first step is when Brandon Wimbush believes he can make those throws and doesn't distrust what his eyes are seeing, then we'll see a significant difference.
I'm really curious, and this is something I don't want to ask BK about until the foot injury, and now it doesn't make any sense to ask it. I'm curious just from a development of a quarterback standpoint as a coach, you look at a young quarterback. When do you say, he can't do this, so let's stop doing it, versus he can't do this, but I think he can do it, we need him to do it, let's keep pushing.
Like, not yet.
I think it's way too early to
make that. No, just like, what's on each side of the line?
Well, I tried to ask that question this week, or where do you strike the balance between, okay, we got to win the game, and that means giving Brandon Wimbush stuff he can handle. He didn't really answer it.
Yeah, I guess I'm looking more like away from the pressures of a game. Like when you look at a quarterback, think like, you know, he can't make that throw. So let's just scrap that. But versus like, well, I think he can make this fade, even though like he's completing it at 20%.
Yeah, I think they're a long way from coming to that conclusion. Because what's he lacking physically to make
the throws?
I don't think there's anything he's lacking physically to make those throws. Accuracy is the kind of thing where you can improve it, but there's a high water mark for your accuracy, just as there was for the guy that comes to mind for me is Malik Zaire. There was a high water mark. Brandon Wimbush is much higher.
Decisiveness will make him more accurate statistically by a long shot because there'll be more touchdowns, yards, and completions, but that doesn't mean he will be a quarterback where you're like, wow, he is just puts it on the back shoulder wherever he wants to. But statistically, he can become accurate because there's guys open.
Yeah,
let's see, he hits Cam Smith and Nick Wisher last week. 75 yards, 2 touchdowns. Right. You know, it looks better.
We talked about that on the last podcast. Like, maybe that's just what the passing game is. He hit 3 of 3 deep balls. Passing game's great. He hit 1 of 3. Man, he really struggled. And the difference between those two things is inches, 50 yards down the field, with maybe a defensive back or two hanging on a receiver. It's really, really fine line.
The other part is, when his mechanics become consistent. Yeah. When he doesn't have to think about his mechanics.
Decisiveness.
When he and when he doesn't have to think about, can I get that throw in there or not? When all those things come together, sooner rather than later, I'm sure. And that's why when I said a couple weeks ago, okay, or after the Michigan State game, all right, now give him some intermediate stuff to throw on you guys over.
Like, no!
Right, you both say, and I get that, and I get that. Yeah. But if you're Brian Kelly, you're thinking, okay, I see this guy, I think this is what he's thinking, I see this guy make these throws in games, and he needs to, or in practice, and he needs to make these throws for us to beat USC, NC State, Miami, Stanford. So you have to, so when you play Miami, Ohio, yeah, go ahead and go back to that. I probably would have given him something that he had success with more early in the game against Michigan State. They didn't necessarily do that.
Yeah, that's like when that game was unfolding, I could sense people online were just like, just run it, run it, run the ball. And I'm like, yeah, actually, you should just turn this into a practice for Brandon Wimbush. And they kind of did.
I think, yeah, but then you start 2 for 9. So
I think from golf to basketball to baseball to football, you're not good if you think. Doing anything in any of those sports, you should be naturally doing things, reacting.
It has to be instinct. It has to be. And you know, I mean, what young quarterback doesn't go through that process of, can I get that in there, or can I trust myself to get that there? At this level, with the athletes that are running around out there, and everything that's expected of a college quarterback today, which is incredible. I think virtually everybody goes through that, and I think Brian Kelly's a long way from conceding that, oh, he can't make that play. Now, maybe there's some specifics there that we don't know or understand, but I think he's a long way from conceding he can't make that play or that play.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a fascinating, it's probably more of a topic for spring ball, but I think it's a fascinating, how do you evaluate this, like, philosophy question.
Now, that sidearm side-winding throw, you could probably
behind
table
the line of
that.
That goes backwards?
Right. Or rolling to your left, you could probably just hold on to that one for a while.
So there are a couple things on the other side of that line.
Yeah.
All right. On that note, that's it for this week's Irish Illustrated Insider. We're all headed down to Chapel Hill tomorrow, and we will be there for pregame instant analysis, postgame instant analysis, columns, all sorts of good content from Notre Dame, North Carolina, and then we'll be back Monday for our next bi-week podcast. So until then, Tim Priester, Tim O'Malley, I'm Pete Sampson. Thanks for listening.
Driving.